Hi, everybody. This is Mark Howell, and I'm thrilled today to have Steve Gladden on the phone and the opportunity to talk about an issue that I think is probably pretty common for most of us, if not all of us. And today I want to kind of focus in on, really zero in on, the idea of how are you currently handling the affinity-type ministry or gender-based that so many of us wrestle with, whether you're in a church of 200 or 500 or 5,000, anywhere along there, you still probably have some kind of ministry for women, some kind of ministry for men, possibly couples and singles. You might even be large enough or forward-thinking enough to have ministry that would be workplace ministry or maybe online, something like that. And so as I was talking with Steve Gladden a couple of weeks ago, I was curious to know how they are organized, structured at Saddleback to deal with that kind of ministry and how it plays into the small group effort. And I just had a lot of questions. So I'm really excited, Steve, that you could join us and come on the line here. Steve Gladden, you may or may not know, is the small group pastor at Saddleback Church. And, Steve, I loved it. I loved hearing your new title. What was that? What's that new title again?
Well, we've gone to a global team because we have 14 campuses, so it's a global small group pastor. But you know what? It's just goofy.
I know, but I love the idea of a global small group pastor. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So thanks for a chuckle right at the start, because that helps always. Listen, let's get right to it, because I want to get into the meat of some of the thinking that you guys have done. And so just give us a take, you know, how have you structured your small group ministry today? You've been there 17 years. What does it look like today? How is it structured?
Well, right now we have all of our small group pastors that are working on developing health for us. That's the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, our five biblical purposes in each individual and in every group. And with that, you know, as they're thinking through that, we've actually changed up our whole process of how we connect people that has enabled our small group pastors to focus on health. So there's many other things that happen, but their primary thing is today is every person at every one of our campuses, whether it's domestic or international, is focusing on building health.
Okay, and so let's walk me through. This is not one of the questions that I gave you, but if you're focusing on health, how does that get measured? What do you know at the end of a ministry season to determine whether or not this particular area pastor or couples pastor or whatever, how do you determine whether they are bringing health or whether there's health in their group setup?
Part of it is, you know, just through getting to know the groups and seeing where they're at and how they're balancing fellowship, discipleship, ministry, evangelism, worship. But we've moved to also electronic tools, what we call My Saddleback, which we have individual app. We have an app that works with the individuals, so we can guide them along a pathway for that. And then we have an app for groups that, in essence, does the same thing. It helps groups balance the five purposes. So both those apps are electronic versions of what's described in my books. As far as our health assessment and our health plan group health and our group planner.
Okay, so if we were going old school and we were facilitating this in a church somewhere else in America or even around the world, we could take the spiritual health assessment and the plan, and we could have a way to kind of measure from a group standpoint and from an individual standpoint. And then, you know, have snapshots available, you know, periodically, and we could know.
We do the same thing, with the group. Okay. The group one's a little bit different than the individual one, but, yeah, you're right. You could do it all old school by paper because we did it for decades that way.
Yeah, yeah. And so, all right, so that's how you're structured, and you've got maybe an area pastor or however their title would be over a certain number of groups. And then are those groups currently divided out, I don't know, exactly or loosely? So, for example, would there be a pastor or a team of people over the women's area, for example? Or would there be one or a group of people? I know, for example, I know a couple of the guys that are involved in the men's area. So would their groups be all men's groups that they're responsible for, those couple guys?
Yeah, and you're asking a strategic question, because part of where our philosophy has kind of morphed to is that loosely, yeah, they're over groups that identify themselves by their gender, but by their affinity. What we have been doing is trying to move more towards taking our gender-based groups and almost realigning and refocusing them on being able to give tools and education and pathways so that they could be the man that God wants them to be and the woman that God wants them to be, and focusing more on that. Because one of the things that we've just noticed over the decades is that you could have a guy in a guy's group and a guy in a separate couples groups, and he could be two totally different people. So what we are trying to do is work within our workplace and our singles and our couples groups and getting them to be able to subgroup by gender so that, the men in the group can take whatever they're studying deeper, and the women can take whatever they're studying deeper. And the men's and the women's people that are on staff or volunteers maybe in your churches are working on the pathway and the tools that individually they could work on, the obstacle that tend to trip us up or the places of where they want to grow. But all of the affinities, men's, women's, couples, singles, as you mentioned, that are in most churches, we still do some affinity-based events or activities to bring education or to bring care or to bring awareness. But we're trying not to get everyone pigeonholed that, hey, I only do couples groups and nothing else. Or, we don't try to get people to move away from fiefdoms and more of a team approach to getting health across the network.
You had mentioned, Steve, that one of the things that your current structure gives you the ability to do, let me back up and just clarify. Would it be fair to say that across the board, the way all of these clusters of ministry, whether your couples area pastors are doing what you just described, so they're not truly aligned around couples, but they have that sort of group that's underneath their care and their support. All right, that was a little awkward set, but what I'm trying to get at is do all of those affinities, and I realize on a technicality you're not grouping them that way, but do all of those affinities report to you? Or report.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because one of the things that tripped us up way early on, and I'm flashing back, 17 plus years ago, but we had groups on different bases the way we're structured, and the men's and women's group were under a different team pastor, and couples and singles were under another team pastor, and workplace was under another place. And so one of the things that we did is just realize that, hey, they're all on the same team. We're all working towards the same goal. So let's get everybody under the same team so that the people that love couples or have couples, well, if there's a women's event going on, they're going to be hitting the women in their group. Clarifies that hitting the women, not hitting on, which either one is that. But they're trying to motivate whatever event that we're pointing people to, because you're always going to have men or women, you know, in your span of care. And then there may singleness or buriedness may come into that equation too, and other things may too. But we're trying to get them all to say, hey, let's look at the calendar together, and let's not die on the hill of, you know, couples, singles couples or men's or women's or workplace, but let's die on the hill of let's getting everybody healthy, and let's make sure our events and our medium-sized groups that we have going throughout the calendar year don't exhaust our people, but give a great smattering to our people of what's going on and what would help in their education or help bring awareness or help bring, you know, an ability for them to reach out and invite somebody in. So they're all kind of working on it together, even though they may have couples groups. We have a men's event. They're all working on the men's event together because we all have skin in the game to make sure it's successful.
Yeah, see, that's a good clarification. Now, you know, Steve, one of the things that I know is that you've been on staff there at Saddleback for 17 years, and I'm guessing that when you joined the team 17 years ago, the ministry was not structured then the way that it is now. And you know what I know for a lot of us who are listening in today, our ministries are not structured the way yours is now. Can you give us a snapshot of, you know, 17 years ago, what did it look like? I know Saddleback was much smaller, but was still a pretty significant church in American landscape. It was a pretty good size congregation.
Yeah, I mean,
17 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, at that time we were approaching the 10,000 mark, but yeah, I mean, it was, you know, and it wasn't like we were trying to be. No one was coming to the game saying, hey, I want my fiefdom and nothing else. But there, for, you know, when there's not clarity, sometimes, you know, it's the Wild West. And so you had, you know, people that were doing couples and ministries and people that were doing singles ministry and people that were doing men's ministry and people that were doing and women's ministry. And like I said, you know, the couples and singles ministries were on the 101 or fellowship base that I got hired onto, and men's and women's ministry was on our discipleship base. And the bottom line is you can make a case for putting anything anywhere, but what was what was clear is that, you know, when we're on different bases and have different bosses and different passions and things like that, we wanted to get everybody under the same hood, and so that we could get some alignment going. So, yeah, 17 years ago we had one campus, and all the groups were scattered, you know, in the various departments or the various teams. And now fast forward 17 years as we're, you know, pressing that 30,000 mark at 14 campuses, you know, the structure has to change to get, you know, the clarity of what we want executed.
Yeah, so now as I listen to you, you know, I mean, you've described what it was like 17 years ago. And so then would I be correct in assuming that you came in the next week after you started and you switched everything to the current structure?
Well, no. You know, I don't have stupid painted on my forehead, so I think I try to go that way. I think it'd be good to know is that at that time, the marriage ministry, and we were, you know, right around, like I said, we were pressing 10,000. It was run by volunteers. And the same thing with the singles ministry was run by volunteers. And women's ministry was volunteer, and we had a part-time person doing men's. So, I mean, it was, you know, just clearly I want the people to understand that, you know, these were all volunteers I was working with. So,
yeah.
And trust me, they behaved a lot like paid staff, you know, in many ways.
Yeah.
But you're right. There was no way I was going to go move their world around.
Yeah, so you took... I mean, I would say, would it be fair to say, too, that you guys are still, you're still moving. You've got moving parts, and you're making, you know, adjustments. You're retooling now because you've got 14 sites and, you know, all of those pieces. So you've moved strategically and probably with a real sense of I don't know if political is the right word, but, you know, to kind of make moves in a strategic and timely way without blowing people away, you know, I mean, when you're dealing with volunteers.
Yeah, and so regardless of who it are, they're people. And so, you know, as a pastor, we want to take care of people, but, you know, the leadership principle is the shepherd picks the next pastor for the sheep, not the sheep. So part of that is, you know, the shepherd needs to figure out, okay, where are we going and what are we trying to do? So part of what you're talking about is one of the things is, you know, what Rick has been beautiful at is we've kind of known the purpose of what we want to do. But as you're trying to change a landscape, so often we try to go in with positional authority and not do it by relational authority. And so I oftentimes describe that as we come in like a military campaign, not realizing what we really have on our hands is a political campaign. And if you know anything about either one of them, a military campaign is done with might and the strongest person wins and it's my way or the highway. And in a political campaign, it's all about, you know, it's all about relationship. And it's all about, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how do I help people move to understand what I'm trying to do? And I get it, you know, if you take either one of those illustrations and try to push them to their extremes, it doesn't work. But just get a sense of what I'm saying is that in most churches, we got to think through, okay, what's the landscape look like? And how do I maneuver the landscape? And how do I get everybody first on agreeing that we're trying to go to the same place?
Right. Yeah, which is different because you've got, I mean, it would be somewhat the same if they were all staff, but it still is so different when you're dealing with volunteers. As many of the people who will listen to this conversation, that's our world. You know, I mean, the volunteer who coordinates the Bethmore Bible study is very passionate about that and convinced about it being the right way and all of those kind of things. Okay, well, that's straight. Go ahead.
Well, Mark, let me just jump in right here because that's why it's so important to know your end in mind because everything, you know, and I know you've heard me say this at conferences before, you know, but, you know, if you're trying to get to a place, you need to put in the full address to your GPS or you're not going to get there. And the problem is with most churches, we tell our people, you know, hey, get them to love Jesus or get them to accept Christ or, you know, whatever the rhetoric is. And what we quickly forget is that, you know, we don't give enough clarity to know exactly what success is. And so part of the way we were able to help people, you know, change was helping them realize whether or not their ministry got us to their intended destination. Now, or our intended destination. So it does take a lot of time, and time takes a lot of relationship. You know, a principle that you want to use, and you can use it with, you know, you use it with your family, so why not use it with the church? But in order to speak truth, they've got to trust you in order to act on the truth. But before they can trust you, you got to spend time with them. And it's kind of like saying, you know, you want to speak truth to your teenager, but the only way they're going to do it is to trust you. And the only way they're going to trust you is if they spend lots of time with you. And that's why I always tell parents, baloney when they say, well, I spend more quality time than quantity. It's parenting 101 is, you know, it is not only quality, it's quantity. You need to spend a lot of time with your kids so that they trust you and you can speak truth. So it is the same thing with volunteers. You got to spend some time with them in order for them to trust you, because anyone who is parented, is you can have all the truth in the world, but if they don't trust you, they're not going to act on it.
Yeah, no, that is really so true. And that's a good word, really, for all of us who are in this ministry. That's big. Now, you know, one last question, Steve. I'm kind of, you know, this is really so helpful, but I love the idea you posed before the call where, you know, just this question, knowing what you know now about, you know, about group ministry, about working with gender in order to produce health, and all of those pieces. Knowing what you know today, what would you do different if you could roll the clock back 10 years or, you know, at some point in the past? How would you have handled maybe a move or a switch or a restructuring? What would you have done different?
Well, I mean, part of it is just understanding the role that affinities could play or do play. And so often we try to get them to do everything. So knowing what I know today is how we get groups started and how we connect people have nothing to do with affinities, men's, women's, couples, or singles. So, you know, just realizing that our connection strategy and how we get things going has come done completely different. I would, you know, because what happened and what we are living with and trying to transition out of is that we have a bunch of people in women's groups and a bunch of people in men's groups, but we know that, you know, their life goes deeper when they're from the same couples group and the same singles group. So knowing what I know today, I would use the affinities more just for education and for pathway and not so much for, you know, connection or care because, you know, you can just get more mileage taking people deeper in their genders, no matter what type of group they're connected in.
Yeah, that's good. Well, if we only had a flux capacitor, then we could send you back 10 years and you could save some time. Listen, this... go ahead.
Let me give you probably weren't going to give me a closing thought, but I'm going to take a closing thought.
Our time is
wrapping up, but you know, if the church you're on, because I have so many churches coming and say, hey, you know, help me do a small group ministry. And really what they're saying to me is, help me figure out what we're trying to produce. And if you think of it this way, if you know your end in mind, then what you're trying to do in a small group ministry is build guardrails so that those groups can get there. One guardrail is a cognitive guardrail. The other guardrail is a relational guardrail. And when you posted and said, hey, if you could roll back the time, I would get all the people just working on those guardrails. The relational guardrail in our language is the infrastructure or the coaching or community leaders that are in place. And the cognitive guardrail is the tools, which is where the affinities play a role, the training, which is our small group training, and its curriculum. Those are the three big areas, and getting the people who are passionate about an affinity to develop tools versus try to develop ministries is going to be so much more beneficial to help building up that guardrail, because anybody can use a tool. But if you try to build a ministry, you're going to try and be a collector of people, and you're going to try and do your own little small group ministry inside the existing small group ministry.
That's so interesting, and I think we're going to have to unpack that in a future conversation. I love that, and especially as we move deeper into the 21st century, tools, and especially the delivery system that you have for those tools, that's a key idea. So maybe that teases an upcoming conversation. I love it.
Yeah, we'll talk about ministries versus, are they tools or are they ministries?
Yeah, perfect. All right, well, Steve, again, thank you for giving us some time today, and I'm excited to think about the conversations this is going to provoke. I'm going to link to a great article that Steve wrote a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, called Aligning Affinities to Your Small Group Model. And then there'll be some other tidbits on the blog post as well. You want to check those out so you can flesh out your understanding of this important concept. But for now, thanks, everybody, for listening in. Thank you, Steve, for the opportunity to talk today. And I appreciate you, man.
No problem, Mark. Thanks always. It's fun figuring ministry out with you. So you're a great person to figure this out with us.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.